Welcome to Off Message. I'm Isaac DeVere. Today's guest, Alaska Governor Bill Walker. Every episode, we're talking about what a strange moment this is in American politics with Republicans and Democrats. Republicans who like Donald Trump and Republicans who feel betrayed by him. Democrats who say they think they know what to do now and Democrats who say they have no clue. Well, Bill Walker is a Republican who quit the party 3 years ago, before all of this. In September 2014, he declared himself an independent. He picked the guy who was the Democratic nominee as his lieutenant governor running mate. And then he won. Now he's trying to be out front on a coalition of what they like to call independent centrists, but really, Republicans who don't feel at home within the Republican Party anymore. There's a group called the Centrist Project that's gathering 13 candidates for governor and Senate in Philadelphia this weekend. They're starting on the statewide races. Walker and I got into how that is supposed to work, and also Macron and Bloomberg, his thoughts on them and how they apply. But also the effects of climate change he's seeing firsthand in Alaska and the concern he has in a very real way about the North Korean missile threat. His own story is pretty interesting, too, especially for a guy who was running for office right out of school as a Republican to get to where he is now, very comfortable, as he put it, with his decision to leave the party behind. Remember to subscribe and rate us on Apple Podcasts or your favorite way of listening to these podcasts. Among the people we've got coming up, Cecile Richards, who will talk about Planned Parenthood and how it played into the Obamacare debate, abortion politics within the Democratic Party now, and what she's hoping to see for women heading into 2020. Follow me on Twitter and on Facebook at Isaac DeVere, and keep those emails coming. I do my best to write back to every email that comes in, so it's isaac@politico.com. And now, my conversation with Bill Walker. You left the Republican Party in 2014 to run. Do you ever look back on that decision?
No, that was a comfortable decision to make. I just realized I wasn't a good fit. I'm an Alaskan, born and raised. That's my whole life has been in Alaska. My folks were pioneers in Alaska. So it was not completely comfortable fitting in somebody else's box. I'll put it that way. I'm an individual.
But you were a Republican. Was it that the party left you, or you left the party?
Well, I think it was a couple of things. One is, I know when I ran in 2010, after that election, I remember well, on election day, a number of people came back to my office my law firm, and they were in tears because they could not vote for me because they were not registered as a Republican because Alaska has a closed primary. And so I certainly was aware of that, obviously, but it had a bigger impact on me than I thought. So when I decided to do it again, I looked at the odds. I looked at kind of the table as it was, and said, I'm just an Alaskan. I really am. So I really trying to be something that I'm not. I don't really realize that. You know, we had certainly I've been a Republican, but never really involved in any of the party participation, so to speak, and so. I don't have any issues with either party at all. It's just that I felt more comfortable as independent.
Do you think is there hope for the Democratic Party, for the Republican Party, or we seem to be in a moment politically here in America and around the world where people are moving away from parties in terms of voters, but the elected officials themselves are not?
Well, I think that, I mean, certainly the country, I think, is about a 43%. Nonpartisan independent. In Alaska, actually a little bit higher than that. So I think that is happening, and I think that I don't spend a lot of time analyzing why people do what they do. I've got my hands full with being governor of Alaska, so I don't know why they are necessarily, but I think there may be a dissatisfaction perhaps, and so I don't know.
Do you think that's accelerated by President Trump, or?
You know, I don't know if it has been accelerated. We have in Alaska, since I've been elected as an independent, we have two members of the House of Representatives are independents as well.
The State House of Representatives.
The State House. Yeah. The State House is are independents as well. One was just reelected this last session as an independent. So, you know, we have accepted method in politics in Alaska, tried and true at this point.
Can you, let's just step back a second here. Walk me through how your family goes back generations in Alaska. How many?
Well, I was born there. My folks came up prior to World War II.
Yeah. And
then you have a life that leads you to being a janitor, to being a mayor early in life, and then leaving politics behind, and then running in 2010 as a Republican, mm-hmm. right? And then this unity ticket in 2014. Trace that back for me. How does that... you're a janitor at 12, right?
At 12, I had a federal contract until they realized they inspected me about a year after I had the contract. And said,
so you were without your working
hey,
papers.
You're 12. And I said, you know, the bid documents didn't say how old I was because I did the work, and I did the work. And so
but you
I
were, had, why were you – there had been a situation with your family that led
well,
to,
we had an earthquake. Yeah. I mean, the earthquake in 64, we were in the construction business, and suddenly we're out of the construction business. We had to move the whole town, so during that period of time – What are you going to do? So in order to put food on the table, we swept every floor and cleaned every toilet we could possibly be capable of doing. So before school and after school, I was not out hunting ptarmigan with my buddies or shooting hoops. I was sweeping the floor of the school that I went to.
Do you remember the earthquake?
I remember it well. I remember it.
Where were you?
I was in the middle of a river. We had chopped a hole in the ice. We were getting some gravel out to make some sand, and my dad, my brother, and I and my dad was shoveling, and my brother and I were supposed to shake this screed over the top of a bunch of buckets and a wheelbarrow, and we weren't doing it well enough. And my dad got a little frustrated with us. He said, let me show you how to shake that screed. So we grabbed that screed, and right when he grabbed it, that's when the earthquake started. So I thought my dad had started the earthquake. And I was like, trees were falling over, the river was breaking up. I'm like, man, Dad's really upset.
Temper.
And so, yeah, it was. I remember well.
And how quickly after the earthquake happens, do you realize that your family is going to be in the situation where the construction business has collapsed and you're going to need to be getting a job?
Well, as soon as we were about 10 miles out of town. So when we got back into Valdez, the dock was gone where all of our building materials, we just spent the morning moving them around and with forklifts, et cetera. And so I knew at that point life was going to be very, very different. When the entire, we lost 5% of our population was killed on the dock. We're one of the largest families that did not have loss of life during the earthquake, so we felt we were the luckier ones. So I knew pretty much immediately that something was. I mean, we had to leave town. All this, kids had to be evacuated out of town and couldn't live there. And so it was.
How long were you out of your house?
We were gone probably about after the end of the school year. So it was March 24th till probably about the middle of June, and so.
And then you get involved in politics relatively early in life.
I did. I was in my home after college. I went back to my hometown of Valdez and working on the oil pipeline, et cetera, and met my bride of this year will be 40 years. Her suggestion, she run for city council. And I did. And
most politicians say their wives don't want them to run or use that as the excuse.
She just thought it was, because of how much I was involved. I was about 25 at the time and how involved I was in the community. I had a business. I had property I was developing, et cetera. And so I did. And then the next year I was mayor. And so I was mayor. I was about 28, I think, or 27. And then we off we went to, and I took off my tool belt reluctantly. And one of the premarital conditions was that we were going to go to law school. I'd sort of forgotten that part of it, but off we went, and so we went to law school together.
So your wife convinced you to run for city council, then you're mayor, but your wife also convinced you to leave it behind and go into law school.
She did. So I resigned as mayor. It was high paying, $1 a year was I was earning as mayor, and I was at the top of my game, and I really enjoyed it, but it was time to go out and do something else, so we did.
It's usually not the case when someone who gets involved in politics that young goes away from politics.
I stepped away for a couple of reasons. One is we started raising a family. And while we were in law school, we had our first child, our second shortly after we got done with law school. So, family was on the way, and it didn't feel like the right time for me. I wasn't, I really didn't have any sort of interest. I mean, it wasn't any sort of a lingering interest at all. I was focused on, soccer games and t-ball and hockey and all the things that, having four children, activities will allow us to do.
But it never left you. You were always looking toward politics, right?
Not really.
No?
Not really.
I mean, you end up running for governor in 2005.
Well, I ended up running for governor because I was involved my law firm with oil and gas resource development, and I was frustrated at what we were not doing with our resources. We were sitting back waiting for somebody else to do something in our state, and maybe it would be good for us, we would hope. And I just thought we were taking the wrong approach.
It had a number of incidents that had created more drama in Alaska state politics in the 10 years leading up to when you ran with Governor Murkowski, Governor Palin. All mm-hmm. People were paying, I think, nationally more attention to Alaska politics than we were used to. And I'd imagine in Alaska that was that was on people's lips and minds more than it had been.
It had been. I mean, we certainly had gotten some national attention, certainly with Governor Murkowski coming in from being in 18 years in the Senate and U.S. Senate, and then coming into as governor, Governor Palin, certainly when she ran for vice president. Alaska a lot of attention as a result of that. So it was the attention was there, but that wasn't what I was looking for. I was looking for results and not just attention. So
you are in a situation now, as you mentioned, there are a couple of independents in the state house. There's a coalition that governs the state house of representatives. You have your independent, you've got your lieutenant governor, who's a former Democrat, joined the ticket with you. What's going on overall in Alaska? Do you think that this is a move where we're going to see more independents elected? Or is it going to be harder for Republicans and Democrats to win in your state?
Well, I don't think it makes it harder for Republicans and Democrats, but I think that we are showing that there's an opportunity for independents. And I think, you know, it's a pretty good fit for our state. We like to say we're pretty independent, and we are in many ways. So I think it's just a good fit for Alaskans.
How does what's going on in Washington look from Alaska?
Well, we're seeing a very different, being a resource state, we're seeing a different attitude towards access to our resources. You know, we're the only state, when we became a state, that we have with the Statehood Compact, we mandates that the state of Alaska, we own the resources in the ground, and we can't sell them in the ground. If we sell them in the ground, then the land reverts back to the federal government, which we certainly wouldn't want to do that. They already have 62% of our land. We don't happen to have 63%. But we have to live off the resource as they're developed. We receive a royalty. So that was sort of the deal we made in statehood. But we assumed we'd be able to have access to those resources. And over the decades since then, different administrations have sort of gotten tighter and tighter as far as our ability to get access. So with this administration, we certainly see a different attitude towards responsible development of resources in our state. We're pleased with that.
There was not a lot of widespread attention to what they called Energy Week at the White House a few weeks ago, but you were there as part of that, had a meeting. It seems like this is one of those issues that while the attention is to a lot of the more the issues that flare up and the Russia scandal and the fight over Obamacare, that actually there has been movement on that. There you see the White House, the West Wing moving every day. People are showing up to work and looking at issues, and energy is one of them. How's that playing out in terms of the interplay you're seeing with the federal government with the White House?
Well, it's playing out well as far as energy. I mean, when the president talks about wanting to establish United States of energy dominance, you can't obtain energy dominance without Alaska really at full potential. And so here we sit with an oil pipeline that is at 25% capacity. It was used to flow at 2.1 million barrels a day. Now it's about 500,000 barrels a day. So we have the infrastructure in place. We have the resources. So the message is energy dominance are words that we like. We think that's good for us. That's good for the country. It's good for the balance of trade. Our closest markets, obviously, are Japan, Korea, and China. So we've been shipping resources to those countries for decades, and so we're looking forward to doing it on a larger scale.
The balance on that, it seems to be, is the policies on environmental regulation. Alaska, in a lot of ways, is at the forefront of dealing with climate change when it comes to American mm-hmm. states. What do you make of the administration's policy on that part of things?
You know, you're correct. We are on the front lines of climate change, and we have a number of our villages, Kivalina, Newtok, a number of others that are in need of being relocated as a result of the sea ice is different than it used to be. They used to protect the shores and from the fall storms, and they're not protected anymore.
What do you mean relocating the village?
Actually physically moving.
Like picking people
it's
up.
It's interesting that I'm a governor that our town, we had, after the earthquake,
right.
We had to move it 5 miles, physically pick everything up. I was in the house moving business as well, picking it up, buildings, and moving them 5 miles. And so that's what's going to have to happen there as well.
Is this like houses on forklifts and moving?
To some degree. Some houses are easier to move than others, but there's a school at capacity there, and we the legislature has funded a new school for Kivalina, but we cannot build it on the little island it's on right now, which is continuing to get smaller, needs to be moved off that island. But they need access to get off of that island. So we are seeing the results, and we're having to figure out how to fund the impact of climate change.
Do you think that what the White House is doing is the right approach on that? Were you happy to see the president announce a withdrawal from the Paris Climate Accord?
You know, the Paris Climate Accord, as a governor of the state, we are doing our own. What we're doing is as far as on climate change, one of the things that we inject more natural gas back into the ground up at the North Slope. It comes out with the oil. It has for 40 years. We put it back in. It's been used to pressurize the field. The volume is the largest, I believe the largest reinjection system in the world, 8.6 billion cubic feet a day. In perspective, that's about 2.5 times what's used in the entire country of Korea, about 80% of what's consumed in Japan. And so, you know, that taking that to the market, that volume of gas to the market, what it displaces in carbon emissions from other sources of energy and heat is very, very significant. 10 million tons a year is what we anticipate it would displace. So one way we're dealing with it is we are basically wanting to put into the area that has some challenges on emissions a cleaner source of energy.
But where do you fall on the climate change is real, climate change is inflated?
You know, it's real because we're seeing it. We're seeing it in the temperature of our waters offshore in Alaska. We're seeing it in our communities, in our villages. We're seeing it. You know, it's not a theory for us. It's so people can argue how it got there, how that happened, and that's not where I focus my time. It's what are we going to do? How are we going to fund the impact of it? I'll put it that way.
Have you had any of those conversations with the president?
I have not. I've not had any of those conversations with the president. We have had communications, but not specific conversations.
But when you talk about energy, you're just talking about the energy regulation and how to get the
well,
energy
we
out
do
of the
talk
ground.
About. I do talk certainly talk about the offsetting the volume of emissions that we would eliminate as a result of the export project. So I have done that, of course.
You share a little something with South Korea in that thinking about the threat from North Korea. If we're seeing missile tests, if a missile is tested, that can go far. The first place that would be on the ability to reach would be Alaska in terms of America. Are people in Alaska worried about that?
Some are. I do hear from.
Are you
folks.
Worried about it?
I'm concerned about it. Of course, I am.
What the difference between concern and worry is?
Well, I get briefings regularly from our military. We have a missile interceptor system at Fort Greeley. You know, we continue to. Here in Washington, remind folks that a greater presence in Alaska in military wise would be a good thing. Sometimes we feel a little lonely up there somewhat. And this year
that's pretty far from Washington.
It is, but this year we acknowledge the 75th anniversary of the bombing of Pearl Harbor, or not Pearl Harbor, but also of Dutch Harbor and on Alaska in the Aleutians. And my dad was in the was in the war in the Aleutians in a group called the Alaskan Scouts. It's actually also called Kastner's Cutthroats. And so we're very aware of our location. And we've seen that in the past. And now here we are 75 years later reading headlines that we are within the trajectory zone from North Korea. So it's actually in some respects gotten here sooner than we thought. We thought that the trajectory would be sometime in 2020. So we're earlier than anticipated, and we want to make sure that that we're well protected in that regard.
But is it something that if you talk to people about in Alaska, they would say, "Yeah, this is on my mind. Maybe we get hit by a missile at some point."
I think it's on. I mean, it can't not be on your mind when you read the headline that we were within the reach. And I know for some time.
But nobody's taking precautions, building bomb shelters, that kind of thing.
No one's hiding under desks that I know of at this point. But we are. But we do have to make sure we have the technology and awareness of what could happen.
I want to ask you about where politics stands now for Alaska. But before I get to that, I want to ask you about somebody who is well known to national political observers, is Sarah Palin. What's the sense on her these days in Alaska?
You know, I don't think that there's any polling being done on that, but you know, she and Todd and their family have a home in Wasilla, and we see them occasionally. I see Todd at least every year when they he's a very strong competitor in the Iron Dog race to Nome on snow machines, and so I saw him again this year at the starting line, and so I see them occasionally, but honestly we read about them more in the national, much more in the national press than we do in the Alaskan press. So
she endorsed you.
She did.
Was that something that you sought, or
I had conversation with her. I've certainly known them for years. Todd's father used to be the basketball referee for me when I was in high school and when they lived in Glen Allen. So it's a small state population-wise, obviously large in size. So they weren't, they're certainly not strangers to us in any way.
But not really a factor in Alaska politics anymore, in Alaska minds at this point.
Yeah, I would think not. I don't think so. I know they're more on the national, international stage.
Was that because she blew up so big when, you know, she was the running mate and then was sort of a national political celebrity, and then Alaska just kind of moved past her, or was it when she quit as governor? Is that
you know, I don't know if there's any one thing that I think that she hasn't been involved much since, because she's been involved quite a bit on a national level, so she doesn't get that involved in the state level.
You talk about independent governing and why it's an important thing and why it's a powerful thing, but it hasn't been going perfectly, right? You've had lots of budget fights. You avoided a shutdown this year, in part by using several billion dollars in savings to plug the gap there. What does that mean? Does that mean that the process is still needs to be changed? Is it that there need to be more independence in, or is it that this is a trickier thing to pull off than you and the other independent-minded Alaskans thought would be the case?
Well, actually, I mean, as we say in Alaska, every governor gets to spin the oil wheel, mm-hmm. and 90% of our revenues have come from oil. And so you mentioned Governor Palin. She was governor. The oil was at $147. Governor Walker, $26 a barrel. So when you plummet from $147 to $26, we went into we lost our revenue decreased by 80%. So when you go from a surplus to a deficit of about $4 billion a year, a lot of hard decisions have to be made, a lot of hard decisions. So I don't think that the challenges we've had really has anything to do with me as an independent. In fact, in some respects, I think it makes it easier for me, although nothing's been easy about my job with what I've had to do, because it's not a matter of trying to pull somebody over to one, you know, one party philosophy or another. It's really right down the middle.
Do you feel, I was looking back at one of the things that you said when you were running first in 2014, or running first as an independent in 2014, that you wanted to inspire young people to get more involved and pay more attention to it. Do you feel like that you've had success in that?
Absolutely.
How?
Yes. And actually, this is the first time the House has changed over to a Democrat Republican independent coalition in decades. So
is that because of youth, you think?
I don't know if it's because of me or not, but I think we've seen we now have two members in as independent. So they actually ran as independent, not they ran as something else and then converted over. They ran as independent. So I think they may have seen the path, perhaps, of that they don't have to necessarily fit into a particular box. They just be themselves and get elected. So.
When you go to the governor's meetings, do they do you have to sit in your own table for lunch?
No. I'm treated just as well as anybody else, and so when they went, some have acknowledged that. I'm fortunate to be a nonpartisan independent.
Other governors have said mm-hmm. that to you?
And after my first meeting with President Obama, he acknowledged that. He said you're gonna like that. And so
yeah,
I think
he did not really like having to deal with Democrats or Republicans, but that was also particular to his not huge enthusiasm for dealing with Congress overall.
Okay.
There are people already, it's only 2017, but there are people already starting to think about what 2020 might look like. But I want to, when Michael Bloomberg decided not to run for president, he had explored it very thoroughly for 2016. They did a lot of research, a lot of money that was put into it. They had a plan. They started scripting ads. They thought they knew who their running mate was going to be. He has a record as mayor of New York City, has obviously many billions of dollars to his name, and was ready to self-fund. When he decided not to do it, I wrote something then that still seems right to me, which is that if in the 2016 environment, with a person like Mike Bloomberg, who had all of those things going for him, that there still wasn't a way to think of a credible, viable independent candidacy, that it doesn't seem like it's possible really in American politics to think about there being an independent presidential candidacy. In the time since, there have been a lot of weird things that have happened in politics that most people didn't anticipate. What happened with President Trump getting elected, but all over the world. You look in France, right? Emmanuel Macron, who is the president of this entire country, that he is 39 years old. He'd never run for office before. And not only that, his party has got near a supermajority in the national legislature. Do you think it is actually possible for us to think about there being an independent candidacy? And I'm not asking whether you're running for president, although if you want to declare, go for it. Is it possible in America, or do we not know yet? It seems like the rules are structured, the situation from the primary and state ballot filing through getting on the debate stages just really makes it impossible in many people's minds to see how this would work. The flip side of it is that you see President Trump, who wasn't a Democrat not that long ago, is not really a Republican by any normal definition of what a Republican is, and doesn't seem to have a lot of party allegiance in the way that committed Republicans do.
You know, I certainly would not rule it out at all. I think that I know based on what we've seen around the country, I think that there is a desire for something other than the two brands that are there. So I think what's challenging a little bit for an independent, we have to sort of explain who we are. In other words, sometimes if a candidate comes up and says, I'm a Republican or a Democrat, people know within probably 70% of kind of where they stand. With an independent, it's like, okay, tell me about yourself. And so it's a little bit different in that regard, but it's also, I think, people like the idea of someone that's going to sort of draw, you know, some from some both as far as, you know, philosophical approaches. One of the advantages I have is I've been able to put together a cabinet that is made up of Republicans. They look at our cabinet. Some people look at our cabinet. My cabinet, they see Republicans. They see Democrats. They see nonpartisan. They see libertarians. They said, and they'll say to me, well, what are you people? And I said, well, we're Alaskans. We're just a group of Alaskans. We're all doing what we think is best for Alaska. So I've never interviewed any cabinet member and said, oh, by the way, what party are you?
Weird if you asked that.
It would be weird if I asked that, but it's not like I'm trying to sort of, you know, placate any balance or this. They are what they are.
Right.
And so it's
on the national
helpful.
Level, I mean, it to think about it, it's like at this point forward from the 2018 elections is about what happened in France, that you have a party that didn't exist with a candidate who wasn't there, who is the president, who has this that kind of showing in the national elections just for the legislature. It seems like something that is not possible in America. To imagine what that would be is like in 2018, we'd have an independent president and the majority of the House and Senate part of that new political party, right? Or is that just outdated thinking, getting more outdated quickly?
I think it's possible. I really do. I absolutely think it's possible. I don't have any question about
and
that.
And how do you usher that along? Don't you need it to be the right candidate? Is there someone out there who is that person?
Yeah, it does take the right candidate. There's no question.
Macron was the person that anybody knew of before he started running. But, and this is why I bring back to the Bloomberg example, just because he did have the funding to do it and was known. And
that helps.
Right?
Yeah, all those things help.
Can you see someone out there on the landscape who would make sense in that way, who would be able to really change the landscape in a massive way? The last time we had a real change to the party system was when Abraham Lincoln got elected. Right.
Well, I do think it's not easy. The rules are not really written to make it easy.
They're written to make it hard.
That's one way of looking at it. So, you know, those that are run as independent have to work a little harder. You have to sort of be a little more creative and sort of figure out how to get it done.
Do you see anyone out there who would do it?
You know, I my focus is really on Alaska. You know, I don't know anybody in Alaska.
But you're an Alaskan and you're an American.
I am certainly that. And but, you know, as an example, when I ran, I joined campaigns with the Democratic candidate who had won the primary for governor. So here we are, two, you know, he'd won his primary, ours an independent, and then there was a incumbent Republican candidate. So we on the campaign trail, we got to know each other. And
that happened late, right? It was not late. A plan that was hatched.
No, it wasn't.
We did an interview a while back with Governor Cooper of North Carolina, and he said his advice to people who want to run for governor, run for other things, is start early. But with your situation, it was actually get this together pretty late in the game.
Well, we did, and we discovered it as a result of we go to a debate, and the incumbent wouldn't necessarily show up, very many of them, because we were just a couple of guys that had very low name recognition and then not much of a chance. So we started answering questions, and then we looked at each other and realized we're answering the questions exactly the same. In fact, occasionally I would say, I agree with my opponent here. I think that's a really good answer, and vice versa.
As someone who's moderated debates, that's the most frustrating thing that can happen at a debate.
People start agreeing with each other. Oh, yeah.
What he said.
Yeah. Well, you know, sometimes peace does break out. And so we had that, and we sort of recognized that. And we had people coming to us after the debate and said, listen to yours. You guys were saying the same thing. And you guys need to get together. So it's a lot of pressure from around the state, people saying, you guys need to get together. So they sort of, you know, and really, really got to know each other, like each other a lot. And so we have a very different administration. I don't think there's any lieutenant governor in the nation that has a kind of relationship with the governor that Lieutenant Governor Mellott and I. And he's still registered as a Democrat. He didn't change his party affiliation.
All right, Governor Bill Walker, thanks for taking the time.
You bet. Thank you.
That was Bill Walker, Governor of Alaska. Thanks, as always, to our producer, Bridget Mulcahy, and our intern, Rachel Cusick. Remember to subscribe and rate us and email me with your great suggestions. And catch you next time on Off Message.